You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. My name is Josh Furlong, and I'm joined with co-host Josh Newman. We're hitting this up in the morning. Josh, how are you feeling so far?
Yeah, I'm a little tired, as we were talking about off air just now. The concept of sleep regression in small children is really getting me this week. You know, every time, you know, we get our guy in a sleep pattern, he decides, you know what, I think I'm going to wake up at 3:30 in the morning. Just, you know what? I think I'm going to wake up at 5:15 again.
It's not going to change. They're going to screw with you for the rest of your life. This is just the test, the beginning. It's how you handle it right now will determine your value as a dad moving forward. So you're screwed, basically.
No, it's all good. And I appreciate you wearing a Bucky's t-shirt. That's fantastic.
I'm here for Bucky. Like, honestly, I'm converted. I need a Bucky's here in Utah. It's not going to happen, but man, there's everything there. So good.
But there's a lot of traveling. Traveling to Big 12 country coming. So
yeah, see, so we got time for Bucky's. Right. That's going to be the stop every time we're in Waco or wherever we need to be. So, all right. Well, we're gonna this week, we're starting our two episodes a week. We want to do a breakdown of the Utah-UCLA game, and then a little later this week, we will preview Oregon State. It's a little crunch this week with a short week, so these podcasts will probably come out back-to-back, and you get to hear us two times this week. So, yay for you.
Or see us two times.
Or see us, yeah. There are a few people that like to see us. I don't know why. But you can see Bucky's. So, there you go. You get to see the Bucky's shirt. So, before we get to Utah-UCLA, though, we don't really talk a ton about the Pac-12 and what they've done this year. So, I just kind of, you know, want to open that up right now. What has been your initial takeaway? Maybe it's this last week. Maybe it's the whole first four games of the season. What's been your initial takeaway or big thing?
Yeah, I think looking at the league as a whole, Washington looks like the class of the Pac-12, you know, with an electric offense, you know, with Michael Penix Jr. At quarterback, you know, and he came back for another year after throwing for 4,600 yards in 2022. I think he finished eighth in the Heisman voting. You know, his coming back stamped Washington as a contender, not only for the Pac-12, but for the college football playoff. And that is exactly what Washington has looked like, the Pac-12 favorite and a potential CFP crasher. Now, in fairness, Washington has not really been tested yet. Okay. Washington has not played anybody. Okay. I think some people thought that Boise State might give the Huskies trouble in the opener earlier this month. Has not happened. So the offense is electric. The defense is more than good enough to do some real damage. So, yeah, Washington. USC has also not played anybody, and they looked a little vulnerable against Arizona State. It was one of those quintessential kind of USC efforts where they're in control, but they're sort of playing down to the competition. You saw some of that last year under Lincoln Riley. USC was in control for a lot of these games, but they were playing a little down to their competition. And the defense was not up to snuff last year. USC's defense looks a little better, but yeah, there's some chinks in the armor there. So look,
marginal,
we'll see.
Marginal.
Yeah. You know, so we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens there moving forward with USC. And then just two more quick things. And then I want to get your take on this. Oregon has also, you know, looked like a wagon. Again, Oregon has not really played anybody either. Okay. They scheduled light in the non-conference. But they look really good. Bo Nix looks completely in control of that offense. And then Colorado is, you know, they got beat up bad by Oregon in Eugene over the weekend. I still think Colorado is definitely a lot better than anybody thought they would be. And if you're trying to like project what Colorado might be like for the rest of the season, assuming that Travis Hunter does come back healthy, Colorado is a bowl team. Colorado's going to win 6-7. There might even be 8 wins on that schedule. I don't know that Deion is like Pac-12 coach of the year, but he's certainly done a better job than any rational observer thought he would.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still torn on Colorado because I think the way that Oregon is designed absolutely exploits the weaknesses of Colorado, right? So that was a matchup that was just destined to be a blowout. Hence the 21-point favorite for the Ducks, and I understand people were a little hesitant to take that line, but I would have hit that all day just simply because I don't think Colorado is built to sustain a team like that. Now, with that being said, we're starting to get to the point where Colorado is going to find out the true test of its depth, right? They've got some players injured. Obviously, Travis Hunter is the big guy that's out. Shiloh Sanders, Deion's son on defense as well. He's been being dinged up. He had to go to the hospital because he was peeing blood after that game. I mean, there's some serious things happening. I'm not quite ready to say that Colorado gets to the 8 win, maybe to 6 wins, get that bowl. I think they get to bowl. But they're gonna have to fix some stuff on offense and defense, yeah. Right? Like Shadir Sanders still holds onto the ball too long. He's getting sacked a ton. That defense can't hold any run game. Any team that can put up a sizable run game is going to blow them out. So, there's still some questions there. I love the Deion stuff. I love the Deion effect. As a Cowboys fan, like I loved Deion Sanders growing up. So that sure. Putting that aside, I still love what he's doing to the game. I think you're seeing more emotion into the game. People are caring about it more, and this should be what college football is about, right? There's too much stuffiness in college football where everybody has to be a little bit, not even pretentious, but it's like, okay, well, we can't do that, and we can't talk about this. I loved it. Ryan Day going off the other day because, Lou Holtz said something to disrespect. Who cares what Lou Holtz says, but Ryan Day does. But, like, those types of things I think are fun for the game. College should be wacky and wild. Like, you have fans rushing the field. You've got, game day where signs are being out there and saying some absurd stuff. This is an absurd sport, and it's incredibly fun. It's incredibly viewable, and we should embrace it, right? And I think Deion's taking that. He's embracing that. He's adding to that value. But at the end of the day, he's still a fantastic coach, right? Like, he still doesn't have the guys that I think he expects to have to compete at a high level. And, right. He admits that. But he's changing the game in a way that allows college football to be college football, and we need more of that. So I'm not going to stay on this Deion soapbox here, but I'll just say, I'm excited for it. I'm excited what it can do for college football. Beyond that, the Washington stuff, I admit I was an early I don't want to say that I didn't believe in them. I was more cautiously optimistic because I didn't know what that defense is going to be. And still, we don't know what that defense is going to be.
Yeah.
They are a load. They're phenomenal. They're scoring at will, way better than even last year. So, I mean, this is a Washington team that really is going to be a contender for the college football playoff until they face somebody that can at least give them some sense of defense or a challenge. And I don't think they're going to face that till the end of the year. And admittedly, the end of their schedule is going to be a gauntlet, just like a lot of these teams in the top of the Pac-12. It builds, just like Utah. Their schedule's building. It's growing. This is going to be a fun Pac-12 season. There's going to be a lot of beating each other up. But right now, Washington probably looks like the best team in the conference just for their ability to be able to score on offense. So I'm excited.
Yeah. As you were talking, obviously you made some good points. Like, I'm looking at Washington's schedule. And again, maybe some of us, I was included, I thought that Boise State might pose a challenge to them. Didn't.
No.
Okay. Washington wins that game 56-19. Looking at Washington's schedule, they've beaten Boise State, Tulsa. They won at Michigan State the week that that Mel Tucker, when all the stuff came out about Mel Tucker, they blew out Michigan State, they blew out Cal, but they did give up 32 points to Cal at home. That's something to keep in mind. And then you start looking at the schedule, and it's bottom heavy. Okay, from October 14th forward, Washington is home for Oregon, which could be a mega super deal, potentially like a college football playoff elimination game. Okay, so you're home for Oregon on the 14th of October. You are at USC on November 4th, and then you are hosting Utah on November 11th. And then look, right after that, you're at Oregon State, which, we'll get into that here. Tomorrow, we'll get into the Utah Oregon State game. But Oregon State is a tough place to play, right? They did a stadium expansion. It's still a bit of a bandbox, and it's a Friday night, and Corvallis is a bit weird, and the place is going to be up for that. So there's a lot of potholes still that Washington will have to navigate here. And as we all know, look, you've been covering the Pac-12 longer than me, but I've been covering the Pac-12 long enough to realize that the Pac-12 gets weird, and the Pac-12 after dark stuff is real, and you can't rule out a clunker, right? Nobody has gone unbeaten in the Pac-12 since 2010. So it's going to be interesting, right? The Washington schedule is bottom heavy, but the Pac-12 is pretty top heavy at the moment, right? You've got Washington, Oregon, USC. I would still include Utah in that upper number one tier until somebody beats them. A lot of good teams. And if a Pac-12 team, whether it be Washington, Oregon, USC, Utah, if somebody's going to go to the college football playoff, you're going to have to survive a lot of tests here down the stretch.
And I don't want to stay on this topic too long. Obviously, we want to get into Utah, but I do want to point out Washington State. They win the Pac-12, Pac-2 championship last week. But they look like a fantastic team. They look like they've put it together. Cam Ward looks like he's improved as a passer. It's kind of what Washington State expected him to be last year. They're going to be a contender, right? And I think that's going to be a fun team, a team that I didn't quite think was going to be in that realm. And you can maybe even throw UCLA in that realm as well. They've got a great quarterback. Utah just found a way to kill him, right? Essentially, with seven sacks. So,
right.
But I think, you know, there are some good teams in the middle here that are going to give all of these upper echelon teams of the Pac-12 some challenge. So it'll be fun. You know, we can keep looking at these each week and kind of update. I don't think we need to get too crazy on it, but it's always fun to check in and kind of see what's going on. So, well, let's turn our attention to UCLA. It was a barn burner, right? You know, a lot of scoring. Barn burner. That's quite the phrase. I love barn burner. You know,
well done.
Everybody came together to watch a barn burn. You know, whatever. maybe that's kind of what it should be for what Utah and UCLA went. It was just like everybody sat around and watched like each other hitting into a wall. So,
essentially,
Utah wins 14-7. It was a defensive performance, right? That's all it was, and you had two great defenses. I don't think there's a lot that's been talked about of UCLA's defense in that game. There's been a lot more about Utah's offense, or the inept Utah offense from that game. But let's start with Utah's defense. I mean, that was quite the remarkable performance. What is your biggest takeaway from that game?
In terms of the defense or just in general?
Just in general.
Yeah. You know, the big takeaway there is that the offense is it's in a bad place, and it's not one person's fault. But you know, the glaring thing is they need Cam Rising back. If you have Cam Rising under center, certain things can happen. Okay. If you have Rising back there, you are essentially able to open up the entire playbook, and Andy Ludwig, the offensive coordinator, can go as deep into the bag as he wants to. After the Weber State game a couple of weeks ago, Kyle Whittingham said that Nate Johnson has about half the playbook at his disposal. And then I asked post-game on Saturday after the UCLA win, is it more now for Nate Johnson, or are you going to expand what he can do? And Kyle said that he's got about 75% of the playbook at his disposal. Now, he might have 75% of the playbook, but that doesn't mean that Ludwig has to use all 75%.
Sure.
And if you look at the play calling and you see the discrepancy between how many runs against how many passes, I think against Weber it was like 72% to the run. Against UCLA, it was closer to like 74% of the run. So that's an indication to me that it's not that Ludwig doesn't trust Nate Johnson to operate the offense, is that he's trying to not overwhelm him, and he's trying to give him what he can handle. He's trying to give Johnson what he's capable of executing, which in fairness, based on these last two games, it's not a ton. Okay. You're trying to keep him comfortable. Again, look, redshirt freshman, not supposed to be in this position, okay? Obviously, it was supposed to be Rising, and then it was Bryson Barnes, and now it's come around to Nate Johnson. So you are bringing this kid along, and he's learning on the fly, and you're trying to just keep him comfortable and give him what you think he can execute. And look, I don't think Nate Johnson played badly, okay? 9 of 17 for 117 yards, threw a 7-yard touchdown pass late in the second quarter to Landon King. Didn't turn the ball over. And that's like the primary thing that Kyle Whittingham is asking of Nate Johnson. We can lob out the term game manager, which I hate.
Yeah.
But in this particular case against UCLA, that's what you were asking Nate Johnson to do. Manage the game. Don't turn the ball over. We're playing defense, and we're going to run the ball, and just don't make a mistake. And the kid didn't make any mistakes. He didn't make every throw, but he also didn't make any real mistakes. So, but bigger picture, if Utah thinks that it's a Pac-12 contender and it thinks that it should or needs to beat the Washingtons and the Oregons and the USCs, and to a lesser extent, Friday night, beating Oregon State, you need more offense. those games, USC, Oregon, Washington, those are going to be track meets. And I understand that Utah's defense, it is a wagon right now, okay, giving up 9.5 points a game, number one rushing defense in the Pac-12. That's fine. The three teams that I'm talking about, they're all going to throw, and they're all going to score points. And, yeah, your defense might show up, but there's going to be scoring. You have to be able to keep up with the scoring, and the way things are situated right now with this offense, it is not built with Nate Johnson to keep up in a track meet. Again, not Nate Johnson's fault entirely. There's a lot of, you know, injuries still, of course, but bottom line is, big picture, you have to be scoring. And I'm pretty certain that Kyle Whittingham knows that to get where you want to go, you have to be scoring.
Yeah, and I agree with this takeaway, because I think it's you know, and it is the glaring point, but I'm going to take kind of the other side of that coin. And part of that is, you know, Nate Johnson, or I think it was Nate Johnson, fumbled three times, or the team in general fumbled three times that game. Yeah. They got it back, so it wasn't a huge issue, except for one time. But at the same time, like, Utah hasn't really put out anything on tape in terms of what an offense can be, right? Andy Ludwig has made it very vanilla. And I wonder, to a point, is this Utah just playing coy until they really have to, right? You don't have to throw out everything. You know, Utah goes up 14-0 in that game, and there was no question that defense was going to continue to stop. Now, there's always that risk that, you know, Dante Moore, who looked like a great quarterback, I mean, you can see there's pieces there that if he can just kind of get a little bit more touch on his pass, like, he's going to be a phenomenal quarterback.
He also showed he was very young in that Utah game.
Exactly. And you know, freshman quarterbacks go to die at Rice-Eccles Stadium, so it's a difficult place. But I think once Utah went up 14-0, they had a couple of fumbles. They got them back, yes. I think Kyle Whittingham and Andy Ludwig said, look, we are going to slow this down. We're going to grind it out. We're going to do whatever we can to make this as vanilla and boring as possible, because we don't have to do anything more. Anything more can potentially get us in trouble and we lose this game, which sounds crazy given that it was 14-0 and it changes so fast against these teams that can score at will. So, like, I understand it's not fully that, right? Like, that this is an offense that honestly hasn't been able to produce the way that it wants to. The players aren't over there saying, like, oh, you know, everything has just been by design. No, they're frustrated in themselves. They made some mistakes. There was the fumble at, you know, almost near the goal line for Utah. They've had issues trying to get past the 40-yard line, getting into the red zone. When they get to the red zone, they generally at least get points. They're 9 out of 11 times in the red zone. But, like, they're just not getting there. And so, part of that, I think, is honestly Utah knowing that they have Nate Johnson, or it was going to be Bryson Barnes. They're not going to necessarily throw everything out because they don't have to. And until they have to, there's no point to put that on film, because now you're going to have that gauntlet at the end of the season where you're going to go up against USC. You're going to go up against Oregon and Washington, all these teams, and you're going to be a completely different offense. And if you can leave as much of that tape off, the better. Now, let me say, I don't think that's going to be that is the full strategy, right? Like, I don't think Andy Ludwig's just sitting here, let's see how long we can ride this out, because I don't think that's a great strategy. But I think there is some gamesmanship there. I think there's something there where they're just trying to maintain everything until Cam Rising gets back, if he ever gets back, right? I don't know. I think we're optimistic that he's going to be there, whether it's this week or the Cal game. But I think they're just doing whatever they can to maintain, not really, like, actively attack teams.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought of it from your position in terms of, like, not wanting to put things on tape. That's a great point. And that has me thinking back to the Florida game, you know, the second half of the Florida game. It was very clear that Ludwig was going very vanilla, conservative, very blah in the second half. And I'm pretty sure I wrote this after that game. The defense was locked in on Florida, and you had a lead and you had control of that game. The entire second half of that Florida game, you didn't need to do anything. There was nothing to do. You didn't have to go, you know, deep down the field. You didn't have to overwhelm Bryson Barnes. And it was very clear that Ludwig was, we're not going deep into the bag because we don't have to. It's game one. Let's just get out of here. And there was a pretty negative reaction from some fans, just like there continues to be a negative reaction from some fans about what this offense is what they think.
Stop booing.
Well, the bail bag's coming, guys. Okay. Wink, wink. Yeah, it's a good point by you. I think a lot of fans are fixated on what the offense was last year, and you averaged 38.6 or 38.8 a game. You know, you bludgeoned USC twice, and you put up 73 against Southern Utah, and you know, and Rising's throwing, you know, lasers all over the place to Kincaid, and you know, Brant Keithy before he got hurt, and Devon Vaile had a breakout. It's not last year.
No,
it's not last year. And I, again, I've said this and I've written this, until Rising is back. And yeah, the expectation is still that Rising shows up at some point, whether it's Friday night at Oregon State or, you know, the Calgary, at some point Rising it is going to show up. Until Rising is ready, it is a matter of survival on offense. Doesn't matter how you do it. Doesn't matter what you run. It doesn't matter. The W is it. There are no style points. There's never style points anyway, as far as I'm concerned. But now there's really no style points with a redshirt freshman quarterback who is still a little green. And from what I've heard behind the scenes, is like taking some of these things like really hard, thinking it's his fault, etc. Matter of survival until Rising is back. That is the bottom line. Survival, W. That's it.
Well, the crazy thing here is, and I understand if you're a fan of Utah or any team that is in a scenario where you're winning 14-7, you're going to be frustrated, especially when you watch that offense. But the reality is you look at the national media who's looking at Utah, and quite honestly, they're not paying attention to Utah that much, right? Like, Utah hasn't necessarily had to.
They never do at this time of the year anyway, until something
big
happens.
They did against Florida because that's a big matchup, right? Yes. Like, and we get that. But the thing here is they're not worried about 14-7, right? And not that national media matters in this, but the fact is Utah continues to rise in the AP top 25. There's a lot of people that are talking about Utah being a national title contender based on their defense alone. This is the stuff that's happening, right? Like, it's okay to be frustrated, and there's a lot to be frustrated here, and we can continue to talk about that, the offense and where the problems lie. But, like, the reality is at the end of the day, like you mentioned, it's about winning. And Kyle Whittingham will do whatever he can to win, and he knew that with his defense he could win. So you see that especially in that fourth quarter. Utah went as vanilla as you possibly can. They didn't have Jaquinted Jackson out there because he tweaked his ankle, and it sounds like it's probably not good. It's been something that he's had for a while, so it's more just rest. It's not like he's out for the season, but it's just going to take some time. So they have Jalen Glover in there, and Jalen's great, but you can't have him run every single down, right?
No.
You've got to be able to get something. But what they did is they essentially just allowed Utah or UCLA to load the box. They continued to run it anyway. They wanted to wear out the clock, and not that they spent 4 or 5 minute drives or anything like that. It was actually like a minute to 2 minutes sometimes. But they knew their defense could hold. You know, if UCLA really threatened to score another touchdown, Utah could have potentially kicked it into another, gear. I still think there's worry there. Like, you don't want to be in that scenario. I can't remember if I turned to you or somebody else who said overtime absolutely destroys Utah in this game, and I don't trust them in that scenario based on how that offense had played, because I think you kind of lull yourself into just a complacency, if that makes sense. And so it's hard to kind of get up and just say, okay, now we have to go be dynamite on offense. Like, it just doesn't happen like that.
No.
You know, there is such thing as momentum, and there was no momentum on offense. It was just sustainability. And so that is a difficult thing. So, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things where you have to be very careful, because you can be complacent. You can get, you know, really down on yourself, and you have Nate Johnson taking the blame on himself when really the blame shouldn't have been on him. There's a lot of things that can cause problems here if you allow it to kind of snowball. I don't think Utah's to that point yet, but we're getting close. I think we're getting close to, if Utah doesn't do something on offense, there's some real danger here that this may not change.
Yeah, I was going to sort of bring up that point. Like, I was going to ask you, do you think that Utah, or specifically the offense, is like teetering a bit? And it does feel like it's teetering a bit. Mm-hmm. It does feel a little ominous. Look, you stole the Baylor game. Nate Johnson.
It felt that way.
It felt that way, right? Look, Nate Johnson had that terrific 15-play drive to tie the game. Cole Bishop had the wild interception, you know, that set him up at the short field. Nate Johnson drove him in again. They didn't steal that game, but yes, like, you know, myself watching on TV back in Salt Lake City, felt like they stole it. This UCLA game, UCLA was never winning that game. even when they had the ball with like 3 minutes left, and you know, and I think they might have had one timeout, maybe none, but anyway, like they had the ball back with about 3 minutes left, trying to drive for the tie. Never felt like UCLA was going to win that game. Mm. And again, we'll get fully into the Oregon State game tomorrow, Thursday, but succinctly, I don't think Utah can beat Oregon State with the offense scoring 7 points.
No.
And look, Oregon State's offense has not been as dynamic as we all thought it would be. DJ Uiagalelei has played fine. He has not been lights out. He has not been the, you know, the revelation I think that myself and some others thought he would be. I don't know. I don't know what to think about that game. I have talked myself into, I don't think Utah can win at Oregon State if the offense continues to play like it did against UCLA.
And I agree with that. And like you said, we'll get into more of that tomorrow. But I you know, sticking with the offense, because I think this is going to be the storyline. You know, we can talk about the defense in a minute.
Yep.
But this is the storyline that everybody's caring about because they want to see that high power. They saw the 38.6 points scored last year.
Right.
They knew it was going to take a step back because of Nate Johnson or whoever was under center. I think you see also a fan base that's excited about Nate Johnson. They want to see him be able to have more of that playbook at his disposal.
Yes.
So assuming, let's just assume that, you know, none of the problems are on the coaching staff making this vanilla. In your eyes, what are the biggest problems for Utah on offense right now?
Well, if you take quarterback out of the equation, I think the running back room is thin. And I was in the minority in the offseason and into August. And I was saying, again, as the minority, I was saying, well, I don't think Utah's running back room is like as loaded as everybody thinks it might be. At the time, I was very bearish on JaQuindon Jackson just because he didn't have a ton of experience, right? He carried the ball 78 times last year, hot and cold, peaks and valleys. Yeah, had the monster finish to the season, but just like didn't have the experience where I'm like, yeah, he's the guy. He, you know, you can hand it to him 25 times. Now, it sort of panned out where like he's just never fully healthy. Like, you know, the ankle thing, he tweaked it. He's like grinding through it at practice and he's getting himself up to play, but he just hasn't been at full bore here all that much. So you take JaQuindon Jackson out of the mix. Well, look, it doesn't sound good. We don't know officially if he's playing Friday, but let's just take him out of the mix for 1 second. If you take JaQuindon Jackson out, it's Jalen Glover, Charlie Vincent, and Kyle Whittingham indicated after UCLA that Chris Curry, like they're trying to get him ramped up, but he's just not the player he was pre-injury. So your running backs room is really thin. And I maintain that like Jalen Glover.
He's back.
Jalen Glover is just not the guy that you can make the bell cow. You shouldn't be, in a perfect world, you shouldn't be giving it to Jalen Glover 25, 27, 28 times a game. That's just not how he's built. I don't think that's a positive role for him. But look, this is where we are. If you take JaQuindon Jackson out of the mix, it's Glover and Charlie Vincent. Maybe you get something out of Chris Curry. That's a bit of an X factor. And then beyond that, you're essentially, look, Dejon Stanley dressed for the previous two games. I don't think he got in there, at least not on offense. And then Kyle Whittingham indicated that they're trying to get John Randall ramped up, right? Another one of these true freshmen who they're high on, but they just haven't been ready to make an impact. So if you're trying to take pressure off Nate Johnson and not put everything on his shoulders, you of course need an average, sufficient rushing attack at least. The room is not looking super great right now.
Yeah, and you know, the talk is that Jalen will be the guy, and then you're going to see probably some of these freshmen mix in there. I talked to Chris Curry this week, and he seemed to indicate that he's going to have a bigger role this week. Nothing has been said from the coaching staff, but he indicated that. But I've heard players say that before, and then they get no touches. So, you know, I don't want to put too much stock into that. But I think they really want Chris Curry, because if you get anywhere near what Chris Curry was at when he was playing last year before he got injured, that's a phenomenal get. I think there was a legit consideration last year that Chris Curry may steal that starting spot or at least be in that top two, especially with Tavion going off with his nonsense. You know, sure. Chris Curry was one of those guys that was going to have a breakout season and then had a tremendously horrible injury that has taken him forever to recover from. So you're going to get some of those guys. But going more to your point, a lot of the times, you know, like you could easily say that offensive line play needs to improve. And that does. I think overall the offensive line has been decent. There's things that need to be fixed, and you can look at the UCLA game and say, oh, Utah's offensive line sucked. You know, they got blown up. Yes, they did, but also UCLA's front seven is incredibly talented and really good.
A lot better than it was last year.
Oh, 100%. They were so good. And so, like, some of that is just going to be on an incredibly tough defense. But the one area here is typically you see the first 3 yards are usually attributed to the offensive line for a run game, right? If you can get 3 yards, that's the offensive line doing their job. They're giving you what they need. Anything beyond that is on the running back. The problem is Utah is getting 3 yards most of these times, right? I need to go pull what their average yards per carry is. It's more than that. But the thing is, they're not really getting into that second level a lot. They're getting there, they're getting the contact, and then they're not able to do anything with it. They're either not hitting the holes well enough. They're either not, you know, being physical enough. They don't have the vision. That's where this takes the next level, right? Jalen Glover can be a great running back. He just hasn't yet found the vision to be able to get to where he needs. You know, he's not a physical back in the same way Jaquindon Jackson can be a physical back, where he can just hit a hole and just by his size and strength alone can probably get an extra 2 yards out of that. Jalen can get there. It's not that he's not built. He's a big dude. But it's Utah finding ways that they need to be able to move forward and take what the offensive line is giving them and moving forward with it. Now, once again, UCLA's defense is phenomenal. They're, you know, one of the better teams in run defense. So it's not like this run team is completely devoid of talent and Utah's screwed and, you know, everything's, you know, over for them. I just think they need to get a little bit more creative and trying to figure out what they have, especially since you don't have Jaquindon Jackson likely in the mix for this week. So, you know, I think that is a big problem. But at the same time, you've got to develop a passing game, right? I think Kyle even mentioned it on Saturday or Monday. I can't remember which day it was. If they don't develop a passing game, that box is going to be loaded every single time, and there's no reason not to. Yeah, Nate Johnson can scramble with his legs, and he's going to do stuff that, you know, a Bryson Barnes, let's say, couldn't do. But you've got to find something downfield. You've got to find Devon Bailey for even 10 yards. You've got to get tight ends involved. That's the crazy thing. We haven't even seen any tight ends. Like, you got Landon King that touchdown. Thomas Yasmin's had, like, a couple catches. You've got to be able to get something there. Give Nate some confidence, right? 3 yards, 5 yards out from the line of scrimmage. Give him something. And they haven't done that. And it's made it really difficult to be able to manage Utah's offense because they're getting blown up every single time.
This is where you could use a guy like Brand Keithy, who?
Who is he?
Oh, that guy, right.
We don't talk about injuries.
Until we decide to talk about injuries. Look, Brand Keithy for a long time has been a security blanket, whether it be for Tyler Huntley or Charlie Brewer for a small time or Cam Rising. That's a guy who you know you can target 8, 10, 12 times a game, and he's going to get you 6, 7, 8 catches. Mm-hmm. And you know, at one time during Keithy's career, we were talking about, or even Andy Ludwig, you know, was talking about, you know, we can do all kinds of things with Brand Keithy, right? We can line him up out of the slot or have him go on a jet sweep or even line him up in the backfield, right? Brand Keithy was a running back in high school. So, yeah, I don't know why people thought that, like, Thomas Yasmin was going to turn into Brand Keithy all of a sudden. I know, again, sort of like Jaquindon Jackson, but to a lesser extent, Thomas Yasmin had this, like, big kind of stretch run late last season, right? Had the long touchdown, you know, with all the yak in the Pac-12 championship game, and he caught a touchdown in the Rose Bowl, and everybody thought, oh, like, Thomas Yasmin's arrived. He's not Brand Keithy.
No.
He's not a guy that you can target that many times and expect that he's going to get you all those yards. I think we expected a little more productivity out of Yasmin, but certainly, you know, can step in for a guy like, you know, a guy like Keithy. So, you know, the tight end position, if Landon King can, you know, can get in the game more and can gain some more trust of the coaching staff. Look, Kyle Whittingham has said some very positive things about Landon King here for a while now. And again, I've referenced this before, like, Kyle will not always give you exactly what's on his mind, but he will often lead you down the path.
Yeah.
Kyle is a big fan of Chris Curry. Kyle really thinks that Chris Curry could be something significant if he ever gets healthy. Kyle is also a big fan of Landon King, but he's got to gain weight and he's got to get, you know, further on board and get more comfortable with the playbook. If these things happen, when they happen, if they ever happen, Utah turns into a different team. But for right now, you know, this is sort of where we are. And I think where they are offensively, again, is not in a good place. And there's time to fix these things. You know, if you can survive Oregon State and somehow get out of there with a win, no matter how you do it. Okay. If you survive and get out of there, you know, with a win, you're 5-0 going to the bye. And your season essentially starts in earnest on October 14th against Cal, because you've got the meat of the schedule in front of you. You know, beyond Cal, you still have USC and Oregon and Washington. I don't think a trip to Arizona is just the automatic, you know, green check mark that it used to be. So, again, kind of goes back to my point. It's just, it's not in a good place, but nobody cares. It's a matter of survival until you can get your guys. If and when Rising comes back, I mean, if Rising is not playing Friday night in Corvallis, I think at that point you've got the bye to like finally get the ramp up process done and get the clearance from, you know, the orthopedic surgeon. If Rising doesn't play in Corvallis on Friday night, my heavy expectation is he's debuting October 14th against Cal. If Rising, and we're kind of off topic here, but if Rising does not play by Cal, then I start to have questions about, is this really going to happen?
Yeah.
Like, is Rising coming back? Same thing with Keithy. Like I said, Halloween was kind of like my soft deadline. I think if you don't start to see some guys by Cal, I start to question, like, is this ever going to happen?
Okay. This is my last point on offense before we move on, but you know, this is kind of the point. Everybody's looking to Cam Rising and Brant Keithy coming back. It's being kind of the savior of this offense, right? All of a sudden, everything's going to change. In your view, and this is maybe teeing up a little bit of your mailbag and the questions that were asked there, so go check it out, his 2,200-word article.
You kept it all?
I did.
Wow. That's a lot of trust.
It was good. I trust you. The fans, we'll see. If they read it, then we'll see. If they don't, we're burning it. No, I'm just kidding.
Fair enough. That's done.
So teeing off on one of the questions there, will Utah's offense be better with Cam Rising in it, or is it still going to be some of the same?
Yeah. Again, mailbag is out today, Wednesday. There's a lot to get into there. I led off with this question, and I thought it was a fair question. Like, what will Rising offer to the offense? And I made this point back towards, you know, the top of the show. With Rising in there, you can most likely open up the entire playbook, because Rising's knowledge of Andy Ludwig's scheme. Remember, this is year 5 for Rising working with Andy Ludwig. This goes all the way back to 2019 when Rising was serving his year in residency after transferring from Texas. In 2019, Rising would spend game days, home game days, up in the box with Ludwig, trying to like learn how Ludwig operates and how he calls a game, just trying to get himself more comfortable. So there was a high level of trust between Rising and Ludwig. So you're probably going to see the entire playbook open. Now, again, coming off knee surgery, whenever game one happens, I don't know that like you go deep into the playbook, but the number one thing that Rising will bring the offense is the ability to do more things, to try more things, because there's, quite frankly, there's more trust in Rising than there is in Nate Johnson, which is not a knock on Nate Johnson. Again, redshirt freshman, still very green, has only started 2 games. Nate Johnson is not Rising. So, and I made this point in the mailbag, and I think I might have said it on here too. I think, you know, the notion that Rising and the medical staff and the orthopedic surgeon are waiting until Rising is 100%, that has to be put into relative terms.
Sure.
Rising might not be like 100% flat like that, but he will be 100% healthy enough to play in a game and to do what he does. And a lot of what Rising does as a quarterback is moving laterally, design runs, getting out of the pocket, making something happen, sometimes putting his head down and running somebody over and getting that, you know, that extra 3 or 4 yards. The telltale sign to me about how healthy Rising really is when he comes back is watch how many designed runs there are for Rising. Because last year in 2022, Kyle Whittingham said a couple of times that they are comfortable with Rising running, whether it be on a scramble or by design. They're comfortable with him running between 8 and 12 times a game. If and when Rising comes back here, if you're seeing Rising run, you know, 8, 9, 10 times, I think that is an indication that, okay, he is healthy. He is pretty close to his old self. And then you can kind of take a breath and it's like, okay, if he comes, I'm making this up. If he comes back for Cal, that's sort of your dress rehearsal, right? Because you know what's coming after that. So Cal is like the dress rehearsal, knock some of the rust off, let him do his thing. And then you can really maybe really crank things up going into USC on October 21st.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some rust, right? Like, I think, you know, the ideal situation is that he plays this weekend, just simply so that he has an opportunity to be able to get two games under his belt before he really gets into the gauntlet.
Yes.
I think having one game of Cal is beneficial, but I think you still want to have more games there to be able to help him, plus the off week, so then you get him kind of sandwiched with some film and some other stuff. This isn't going to be perfect, right? Like, Cam isn't going to go in there and throw for 500 yards. He was never really that guy anyway. But at the same time, the difference will be that Utah's coaching staff is all that much more comfortable with him, and you're going to be able to have an open playbook, and they're willing to take chances because they know the type of caliber of player that Cam can be. And so I think you're going to get more of that. The players are going to rally a bit because they trust him. They understand him. Micah Pittman, who desperately wants his teammate from high school to be able to be out there, like, I think that changes his game. And, you know, he's still a little banged up, so when he gets on the field, that'll change. But, you know, I think it's going to change it, but I wouldn't expect this wholesale change where it's suddenly Utah scoring 35 points at will. It's going to take some time, and I think you need to get him in there. So,
you know what comes to mind just real quick? This is not a fair comparison, but it just came to mind. The infamous San Diego State game Charlie Brewer got benched and Rising came in. I remember sitting there with you and Steve Bartle and Michelle Botkin, and like when Rising came in, like everything sort of clicked better. Like the offensive line looked – what's that?
It wasn't perfect, but it clicked.
It wasn't perfect, but like everything started to just like look a little more seamless, right? And just everybody looked more comfortable, and the offensive line looked a little more stout. But again, not the same thing, but like I do wonder if Rising's return, whenever it happens, if that gives everybody another pep in their step. Like, does the offensive line start blocking better? Does Devon Vele run a crisper route? Not that he's not running crisp routes, but like, does that do something for the, like the collective psyche, knowing that their guy, their leader, their, you know, their captain is back? I think there is something to that from a collective, like, mental standpoint.
Yeah. I think that will absolutely change the team's, you know, psyche and give them at least more confidence that they know that they can do something and move forward. So it'll be interesting. You know, once again, I hear that Cam's getting close. I think last week it was literally this close, and I'm holding my fingers as close as they possibly can. It's just not there yet. I believe he's, you know, they're taking first team reps. You know, I think they're practicing as if he's the guy. It's just a matter of, can he get that clearance? So we'll see. So moving real quick over to the defense, and you know, it's crazy. I don't want to say we don't need to spend a ton of time on this, but at the same time, like, this has been a phenomenal performance by Utah this year. You know, they're holding teams to 9.5 points per game. They're allowing only 51 yards per game. They've allowed 15 or less yards in two games this season to Power 5 teams. This Weber State had more yards than Power 5 teams. Like, this is incredible performance by Utah's defense. It's been pretty remarkable to be able to see it, knowing that they've had second, sometimes third string guys in there. Some of those guys get banged up, and then the first team guys get in there. You know, we're seeing kind of a team come together, and just whoever is in there is going to play their hearts out. Jonah Ellis had a phenomenal game. Three and a half sacks. Yeah. Three and a half sacks. Two of those came on that last drive that just was honestly one of the most phenomenal drives I've ever seen Utah have.
Monstrous. Yeah.
It was pretty incredible. So my question for you then is Utah's defense elite?
Yes. And every number, every metric will back that up, from, you know, the 9.5 points per game yielded to, you know, 51 rushing yards per game. The raw stats in terms of passing defense are not great, but let's remember here, they're playing Power 5 competition.
Yeah.
And a lot of these teams are, well, all of these teams are playing from behind, so you're throwing the ball more. Dante Moore, you know, wound up throwing for, you know, whatever it was, I think like 257, but that was pretty bloated because, you know, you spent the entire fourth quarter coming from behind. So that's a little bloated. Just every metric there is supports the notion that this Utah defense is elite. And now often, you know, you get to late September and some, you know, teams have played 3, 4, in some cases 5 games. And a lot of these statistics start coming together and they start to make some more sense. And often this time of year, you can explain some of these away at the Power 5 level because Power 5 teams play, you know, FCS or Group of 5. Utah hasn't done that.
Yeah.
Okay, Utah's played Florida and Baylor and UCLA. Okay, 3 of their 4 wins are against Power 5 competition. And I don't care, like, how good or bad, you know, Florida might be. I don't care how good or bad Baylor might be. They're playing Power 5 competition, and they are still putting up these numbers. So, yes, I would classify Utah's defense as elite. And we say that at a time when the defense is not whole. Okay. Connor O'Toole, who Kyle Whittingham has called probably his best edge rusher, has not played a snap yet. Junior Tafuna has missed significant time. Samote Pepa has missed more time than Junior Tafuna. Kareni Reed, who opened that UCLA game with a pick 6 of Dante Moore. Kareni Reed had a concussion in the first quarter of the Florida game, missed the Baylor game. And did he dress for Weber?
He did. He played, yep.
Okay, so he's essentially missed 1 3/4 games, you know, essentially 2 full games. So, again, as you alluded to, I mean, you're playing backups and third-string guys. Jonah Ellis leads the nation in sacks, and he was their projected backup defensive end for all of camp because Connor O'Toole's been out and Van Fillinger's been out with injury and illness. So I'd like to see what this Utah defense looks like once they get fully healthy, once they get whole. It sounds like Fillinger is a go for Oregon State, and the indication is we might see Connor O'Toole finally for the first time against Oregon State. So, they're getting healthier, and it's going to be fascinating to see, like, does Jonah Ellis hold on to that defensive end spot? You know, what does that look like once, you know, O'Toole comes back? Who's on the other defensive end spot? I'm drawing a total. Logan Fano as a freshman. So what does that look like once everybody's healthy? Keanu Tanivasa has played really well.
Really well.
Does Samote Pepa step in there and just take that spot? I don't know. Like, Tanivasa's played really, really well. So these are good problems to have when your defensive front four is playing as well as Utah's has, and now you're getting healthy. So, you know, whatever you think it is, right, 7, 8, 9 deep there, it's good to have depth, and these are good problems to have trying to figure out where these different puzzle pieces fit properly.
Yeah, and Utah's, you know, their defense, they rank 9th, or they're tied for 9th in total defense. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. But you look at that passing defense, and like you mentioned, I think Graham Mertz, you also had Dante Moore, most of their yards came later. And, you know, Graham Mertz in particular, his were a lot of just screen passes that went for big yards because Utah's, you know, really keyed in on the run. So, I'm still curious to see that. That is still the area where I'm most curious to see, especially as Utah gets into, you know, the Michael Penix or the Bo Nix or the Caleb Williams, how that passing defense will fare. But I think it's safe to say with 3 Power 5 teams, you know, under their belt, this is a legit defense, right? This is, you know, at the beginning of the season, we kind of hinted at it and we said we didn't want to, like, really get into that yet because it's still too early. I think we're getting to that point now where you can look at this defense and say they have the makings of being a championship caliber defense. And I don't mean Pac-12 championship. I mean national championship defense. Now when I say that,
people are going to get upset if you say national championship.
Get off the ledge. Hold on. Like, yes, they have a national championship caliber defense, but they still aren't there yet, right? Like, the offense, if they can get there, if you go undefeated in this schedule, by all means, live it up, have fun, go enjoy the playoffs. I think you've got at least a decent chance to be good with your defense. But, like, let's not get a little too crazy here. I just think, like, they have probably one of the best defenses that Kyle's ever put together. And, like, you've got some young dudes that are going to be here for a while. The Big 12 is going to face a lot of these guys next year. So this is a defense that you can celebrate. I think I saw more celebrations about a defense last week than I've ever seen in a Utah game, and there's been some phenomenal defenses. But, like, there was legit excitement in that game watching that. So it'll be interesting. I do, like I said, I want to see how they fare against a passing team. you know, this game on Friday is not going to be that. DJ Uiagalelei is not a passer necessarily. Oregon State is very much so a run first type team, very much like Utah. This is very much a Utah type team. So I don't know that we learn necessarily anything there, but this is a great defense to have. This is something that's going to be great for Utah moving down the road. So anything else about UCLA?
No, I think we covered it. Again, tremendous defensive effort, and I think you saw the, you know, the warts of what Utah's offense is right now and what they're really missing. That's the last time Utah and UCLA will play as Pac-12 members.
Oh, you had to do that. You had to.
I'm not going to go like super into it. If you'd let me make my point, please. Thank you. No, just, you know, throughout the last, you know, whatever it was, 12 years, 13 years as conference members, Utah fared really well against UCLA, no matter who the coaching staff was. And I think Kyle did really well against Chip Kelly, and it's not always easy to go against Chip Kelly, right? He's still kind of this offensive guru who can find the holes and exploit things. So, yeah, you know, it's hard to play against Chip Kelly, and Kyle for his part did really well through the years against Chip Kelly.
He did well as can be expected when Chip Kelly was at Oregon as well. So
that's true.
You know, Kyle's gotten the upper hand a couple times. Look, we're not going to get into the Kyle Whittingham is predicting Utah to the Big Ten. So
please don't
get
Thank
off
you.
Of my message on messages on that. My tweet has seen more than 300,000 views because people are insane. Like they're insane, and it's just nothing. I don't know.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to wrap this up here soon. But basketball, yes, basketball. We're 5 weeks into football season. Basketball has returned. So men's and women's basketball had their first practice yesterday. We'll get into that. We're not going to go crazy on this, but
there's time for that later.
There is. But just a couple of points. Men's basketball, they believe that they've gotten more depth. They've got some shooting. Cole Bajima, Lawson Lovering, those are two guys that instantly add some shooting as well as just added depth to the team. But they also have Davon Smith, and we talked about that, I believe, in the preseason about Davon Smith and your conversation with Craig Smith. They're still waiting on a waiver for him. He's a two-time transfer, and so they've kind of got to wait and see. But if he gets cleared, this is one of those scenarios where Utah might have one of its best point guards on paper. I'm just waiting. From what I saw yesterday in practice, he has some shiftiness and ability that Utah hasn't seen since probably DeLon Wright. Maybe I'm making an exaggeration and we'll see, but based on one practice, I think he can be that guy. We'll see how that develops, but this could be a remarkable thing. So are you expecting Utah to be better this year?
That's a tough question.
We saw one practice. Come on, you should know everything.
Kind of. I learned that lesson many years ago watching practice. You can't take anything off one. But no, I think that the Davon Smith waiver situation is critical because they have not had that shifty, like really dude-like point guard, right, since Craig Smith has arrived. And that's no knock on Raleigh Worcester because I think Raleigh has been solid for Craig Smith, but they could certainly use an upgrade at that position. The problem is the NCAA, as we've seen on the football side of things, the NCAA is really cracking down now on two-time undergraduate transfers. So if you're taking the football side of things and what we've seen there, if you're taking that for what it's worth, I don't know how much optimism I have in Davon Smith getting a waiver, but that's why you have a compliance department to make the case, and we'll see what happens there. Now, I think with Davon Smith, I think they have a chance to be really good, and I do think that they have a lot more depth, and Craig is really high on Cole Bajima. Cole Bajima is if you've watched Pac-12 basketball, if you've watched the University of Washington, Cole Bajima is a knockdown guy from all over the gym, and we saw when Gabe Mattson went down in mid-January with an injury, there just wasn't any depth, and there wasn't anybody who could step in and even like reasonably replicate what Mattson brought to the table. So you go out and you get Cole Bajima, you go out and you get Lawson Lovering, okay, a very promising freshman big guy from Colorado who played really well down the stretch for Tad Boyle. I'll be curious to see, you know, do you put Brandon Carlson and Lawson Lovering on the floor at the same time? If you're going to do something like that, right? 2 7-footers, somebody has to be comfortable sort of like drifting out to the perimeter and potentially having to guard a stretch four.
They're trying Brandon in that, by the way.
Say it again.
They're trying Brandon in that role, by the way.
That's, you know, that's the point I was going to make. You know, Brandon has a little more experience. He's, you know, he's a veteran of, I don't have in front of me, 90 some odd games. Hasn't played much of the four, right? He certainly didn't play it in high school. You know, Larry Krystkowiak didn't ask Brandon to do that. Craig hasn't asked him to do that. So that's sort of this brave new world for Carlson if you're going to have the twin tower, so to speak, of Carlson and Lovering. Look, I saw what you put on Twitter. It sounds like Kay Bakeda has taken steps forward and Will Exact has taken steps forward. So, you know, you look at the Pac-12 as a whole, I'd probably, if I'm doing a preseason poll right now, yeah, I'm probably putting Utah like, yeah, 8. But you look at the league, you look what teams around the league have, I don't see any reason why Utah cannot be like fighting its way into the top half of the Pac-12. And if you're in the top half of the Pac-12, you know, you're probably fighting for bubble position. You're fighting for postseason position. So, and like you said, I think we talked about this like during the football preseason, but like the excuse is that like, oh, this isn't Craig Smith's roster and he had to turn the whole thing over. That's done.
Oh yeah.
This whole thing, you know, technically Brandon Carlson was a Larry Krystkowiak recruit, but this is year 3 for Brandon under Craig Smith while he only played 2 under Larry. So as far as I'm concerned, this is Craig Smith's roster and he has control over the entire schedule, which was not the case when he first showed up here. So time for excuses is rapidly ending. Okay. This is your schedule and your roster. You have to figure things out, because if you don't figure things out in year 3, you know, calls for something to be done are going to get a little louder. But we're not quite there yet. I'm just saying, if you don't get something done, big picture, there's going to be some talk.
Yeah, and you know, in short, put me in the camp that I think Utah will be improved this year. I think they have better defense, barring injuries. You know, I think not defense, depth is what I meant to say. They probably have good defense. I don't know. Craig likes his defense, so that's good. But I could pencil them in maybe in that 6th spot. I think they could be in the middle of the Pac-12, maybe challenging for those upper echelon type teams.
Yep.
I think the Pac-12 is probably a little bit more open this year than it was in the years past.
I agree. Yep.
Arizona's still going to be elite. You know, I mean, I think they're probably the class of the conference, but I think Utah has some ability there, but they're going to have a tough schedule. Craig kind of intimated some of what their Pac-12 schedule will be, and it sounds like a lot of their last part of the season will be road games.
Interesting.
That doesn't bode well. He didn't get fully into that because it hasn't been fully cleared, and I think they have to sign off on it as a league. Okay. So, but I mean, this is a tough schedule. They're locking in all 20 of those games now from the end of December all the way in, instead of spreading out a few of them. So it's going to be a load to manage. You know, Utah, I think, has the talent to be able to do it, at least compete at a higher level. But they have to eliminate those lulls on offense, right? Like, there was so many scoring droughts, extended scoring droughts over 5+ minutes, that Utah couldn't do anything when Gabe Madsen was out. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic about this team, knowing that, you know, there's still a lot that needs to improve, and Craig still needs to get his guys. But like you said, this is his team. This is 3 years in. This is where we can really start judging Craig and kind of his ability to recruit and bring in transfers. So, you know, all the blame is on him now. So.
And just to close up shop here, again, as you said, you were on campus yesterday, and there was a lot going on, basketball, football. You also stopped in at the first practice for the women's team.
Yes.
And Lynn Roberts coming off the Sweet 16, you know, kind of the heartbreaking loss to LSU in that regional semifinal. LSU, of course, goes on to win the national championship. Lynn Roberts returns everyone of consequence. Plus, she hit the portal. And on paper, she hit the portal pretty well. The term Final Four is getting thrown around here a bit. What are your initial impressions of Lynn's team?
Yeah, this is a team that isn't satisfied with the success that they've had, right? They tied for the Pac-12 regular season championship with Stanford. They're expected to be probably the team to beat this year in the Pac-12. I wouldn't be surprised if they were ranked number one. But they're... you know, each year they're trying to push themselves more. They went out and got Jeff Judkins to add to their coaching staff to be able to help. Yep. And he's not by any means taking over from what Lynn's doing. He's there as a, as kind of like an advisor, and he's literally the third assistant coach on that team. And he's there kind of, it is kind of jarring to watch him after roaming the sidelines on BYU for a while, but, you know, he's there to offer his advice and give Lynn kind of that confidant of somebody that's been a coach for 20 plus years who can gives that stuff. So, you know, the one thing that I'll point to, and we'll get more into this as the season develops and everything, but they, you know, if you go into these practice facilities, they'll have all their records. And like, you talk about like, oh, this is the last time they went to the Sweet 16 and all that stuff. They have a sign up there now that has the Elite Eight up there, and it has a circle with an empty spot for it. They are trying at the very least for an Elite Eight, but they're talking.
You don't see that really ever.
And they're, you know, I think they have the team to do it, right? Like, you're a free throw away from beating LSU, who went on to win the championship. This is a team that has the talent. Alyssa Peely is feeling more confident, more comfortable. You've got Gianna Neepkins, who's doing well. Jenna Johnson is adding to her game. You've got all this talent that is improving. And then they went to the portal and got some added depth and potentially a point guard that's even better than what they had. So this is the team that's going to be incredibly fun to watch. They've got a lot of potential. They're not shying away from the expectations. If anything, they're embracing it. And, you know, sometimes teams wilt under that pressure and don't do well. So we'll see. But I think this Utah team is built to be able to contend again for a Final Four appearance. You know, you beat that LSU team. I'm pretty sure Utah gets to the Final Four last year. So this will be a fun team to watch. You know, I'm not one to tell you what to do, but they're going to probably be a team that you want to watch. So enjoy it.
Yeah. And, you know, just the last point here. I mean, I've always said for years and years and years, if you have a squad, which Lynn Roberts does, if you have a squad, go play somebody. The Utah women's team will play South Carolina on a neutral floor at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to find out pretty early. You know, look, it's not the be-all, end-all, but I think we're going to find out pretty early how real this Utah team is going across the country to have to deal with Dawn Staley and deal with South Carolina. And just on a personal note, Mohegan Sun is a tremendous place to watch a basketball game, because if you've never been to Mohegan Sun, the basketball court is in the middle of the casino. You just have to go downstairs, and you're in a 9,000-seat arena.
That's awesome.
And then you go upstairs, and you're back in the casino. So just a personal note, if you're ever in that part of the country, Mohegan always hosts college basketball. Fun place to watch a game.
It'll be fun. It'll be a fun season. And, you know, as football starts winding down and basketball starts gearing up, we'll talk more about them. And
yes,
we hope to have, you know, some coaches or something on this podcast one of these times. So we'll see if we can get that worked out. But it's just a taste of what basketball season will be. And, you know, it's time to be excited. So, but thanks for checking out the Utah Checkdown podcast today. Like we said, we will be back again tomorrow to do a preview of the Oregon State game. So get caught up, listen to this one. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Josh obviously has his mailbag, and he would love to be able to answer all of your crazy questions, even if it extends to 3,000 words next time. Maybe that's a little too much.
I'm not going
to
kill you. Don't worry.
No. But thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys later.